do you want to say, I don't want to work in this industry anymore, I want to do something else, and start taking the time to learn those things so you can be better prepared for whatever happens in the future.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Lens podcast with Rogier Rojas. And today's guest is head of social media for K-Swiss. He's a college dropout and has taught himself everything he knows. And when asked why, he said he wanted to quote unquote take control of his life. He lives in a positive mindset because quote unquote, if you want positive things in life, you have to be positive yourself. I'm excited to have Omar Preswich on the show. Omar, thank you so much for coming on.
Roger, dude, thank you. And that intro was amazing.
I'm glad you liked it. So for people that don't know, Omar and I became an acquaintance, a friend, and someone that I love watching to see what he's been able to do in such a short period of time at an event in Arizona with our good friend Casey Adams. Mm-hmm. And at that time when we met, if I'm not mistaken, you had just been hired. It was less than 60 days.
I don't know if it was 16 days, but it was...
No, 60, less than 60.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was just like 2 months, if that.
Right, because I remember you talking about that. And now, you know, I want for people to get an idea of who you are and then how it came to fruition. And then I would love to talk about the brand itself and the creative direction that you're doing with all these amazing campaigns from Ghostbusters to these online... I saw the gaming shoe. It's just, you know, I'm watching. So it's amazing to witness what you're recreating for the brand.
Well, I'll do my best to answer anything I can. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And the team has had a lot of success and putting out amazing, amazing content.
Omar, how did you get into creative in the first place?
Would you say creative just like photography or... Like,
yeah, let's start off, let's say photography, yeah, because I know that's a passion of yours aside from the brand itself. It's something you love to do.
So I got into creative or being a creative on accident, which was in college. I was a DJ. Mm-hmm. So DJing was a creative outlet for me. And when I realized that I wasn't going to become like, you know, a Diplo or anything like that, tour the world as a DJ, I decided, hey, I'm not bad at selling and I'm good enough at DJing. Why don't I just start my own record label and apparel brand? So I started that. And that's really when my journey of being a quote unquote creative started, because that was me creating a brand and learning everything I needed to on that end. And that was like, just a couple years or a few years after Instagram had just started. So I started doing photography for the brand because only I had that vision in my mind of what I thought it could be. So okay. I learned how to take photos and clubs, lifestyle. I started learning how to design and screen print and stuff like that and create my own apparel. And that's really where my whole journey of a creative started, was simply creating a record label or a brand out of nothing.
I'd love that. And then where was the transition? Because I do know there was a point where you kind of, you know, you brought it up now. I didn't know that. DJ life. You go into photography. Where does K-Swiss come into play? Like at what point did they come into your life and, you know, make that offer or vice versa? You found them and you came across their brand and what they were doing.
Yeah, that's an awesome question, Drew. In 2016, I want to say, somewhere right around there, K-Swiss was kind of starting the process that you're seeing right now. And they had this program called The Board. So The Board was an open thing where you can get where they chose 100 creatives around the world to help rebrand K-Swiss. And at the head of the board was Diplo. So when Diplo tweeted it, and me being into music, I had a couple friends, Christian and Aaron, like two of my really good friends, and they said, yo, did you see that tweet Diplo did for K-Swiss? We think you should do it. So I looked at it and I was like, oh shit, yeah, I'm totally like, I'm all about this K-Swiss, you know, classic Q. Why wouldn't I want to do something with K-Swiss and Diplo? So I put a bunch of things together and made a little video reel, like a submission. And if you like Google Omar Prestwich, K-Swiss, the board, Vimeo or whatever that platform is, because I didn't put it on YouTube, you'll find that submission video. So that's how I got introduced to K-Swiss in 2016, years ago. And yeah, it was almost like a fluke.
Oh, shout out to Diplo for that, huh?
Yeah. Shout out Diplo.
I love that. So now, so you did that, and what happened next after you submitted that?
So what happened with that was I just kind of ran with it because I thought to myself, I'll never have another opportunity like this again, and which I learned was completely false. But I just did everything I could. Shoe designs, even I don't know how to do shoe designs, but taglines. And then I started thinking, all right, if their angle is entrepreneurship, what do I envision that to be? And so I actually got super lucky, but a one-on-one photo shoot with Todd Peterson, who, and this is, I lived in Utah at the time. So Todd Peterson owns this company called Vivint, V-I-V-I-N-T. And they are a billion-dollar company. So he was the youngest billionaire in Utah, and I got a one-on-one to shoot photos with him. So I ordered shoes from K-Swiss.
What does his company do?
Now they do home automation and solar, so you can even like, they're a publicly traded company. So like I was, I've known him for years because I worked with him in college doing like door-to-door sales. And so with Todd at, you know, this time I'm like, all right, if entrepreneurship is what they're going to go for, like this is how, in my opinion, like the modern entrepreneur looks. Like he showed up in this crazy energy efficient, Lamborghini, like something like so forward thinking because he's all about like efficiency and energy savings. So here's this 42-year-old badass, like literally like a Richard Branson, but younger, just no rules kind of guy. And yeah. I put Swiss on him and I shot photos of him, and you can still find some of those there. And maybe I'll just share some after this, like in the next week. But I took photos of him and just ran with the program as how I saw it fit. Like, for example, this never happened, but I thought, all right, part of the program was to do a give back portion. How would you give back to the community? And Diplo does these, what are they called? Mad Decent Block Parties. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of those, but they're massive. So I actually caught, I freaking pulled some strings, and I wish this would have happened, and it never did because it would have kicked ass. There was a company in Utah at the time that was called People Water. So for every water bottle you bought, they would donate a water bottle or help create like these water wells.
Different containers, things. Yeah, to help for clean drink water in an area.
Yeah, so like I heard of those. Yep. So I don't think they're in business anymore, but I reached out to them and I got a hold of like basically the main dude that's in charge of these kind of collaborations, and he agreed to give me some stupid deal on water bottles to get them dirt cheap. And the plan was to get all of these water bottles at Mad Decent Block Party. So the only way that you could drink, like, you know how they sell water bottle, it'd be through People Water. So that way people, you know, spend $2-3 on a water bottle, but it was just like helping do all this stuff. And then I went above and beyond, and with the money that we were going to raise with the water bottles, because I worked out the deal that we could keep like all the profit. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who was helping build a hospital in Africa, and he got me in touch with the people, like the main people. And they said, hey, look, what we need is supplies, and this is how much money it would take. So I was like crunching numbers and thinking, if we sell X amount of water bottles at these Mad Block Parties, we could pay for X amount of hospital equipment, and they agreed to put K-Swiss's logo.
Wow. Like, on.
And it never happened. Like, I literally was like pulling strings, making calls, like, how do I make this happen?
What was the X factor? Why do you think?
Because at the end of every, with the board, you had an assignment. And at the end of the assignment, they would review what everyone did and pick the winner. Mine never won. Like, I never won anything. But that one idea, to this day, I'm like, shit, that could have done so much good. Like,
yeah. Insane. Everything cools down with Corona. Maybe we could do a private I'm dead serious. Maybe we could do like a private event, have a DJ, make it like fundraiser focused, and you can call up those people to make it happen.
That would be insane. And I think I know some people that can make, and you know some people too. So that's what happened with the board. And then it just kind of vanished, like nothing. I never heard from K-Swiss. I never like what the fuck, or, mm-hmm. you know, what was going on?
Right.
Right before it ended, like a month before the, because it was like a summer intern kind of feel, but it was all online because there's people from all over the world. I did something that to this day, I don't know why, but I decided, hey, E3 is going on. I have a free pass to E3. And if I'm going to be in California for E3, why don't I also visit K-Swiss? And this is before the offices that there are now. So I actually just sent an email and said, hey, I'm going to be in California. I'd love to visit you guys.
Mm.
So they never had anyone do this. And so I just showed up with my crew. Like I had a videographer and my homie, Christian, who actually now produces our podcast, which is really cool. But we went to the original K-Swiss headquarters. And
where was that?
I can't remember. Way far out.
It was in LA, or was it?
It was in California. It was like 2 hours away from Los Angeles. It was like way north. Really cool. Very country club feel. But that was like really interesting because I remember walking in there. I had like long hair, like almost down to my shoulders. There was a picture of me like on the wall. I remember that someone recognized me and they were like, oh, you're Omar, you do what you love. Like that was my thing. Like I do what I love. So that was like really powerful and motivating because in the future I realized the power of not being afraid to show up at someone's door when you've given a lot of value. And I never asked for anything. I was just like, I wanted to see this. And then after that, nothing ever happened, but I stayed in contact with a few people.
I think that's a great takeaway right there that we should talk about, of how you provided value without any ask. You were just there because you saw an opportunity, you wanted to take advantage of it, and you knew with your skill set that something could be done. And if not, you were still okay with it because you tried, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, and another thing to add on to that is I didn't realize at the time, because I was like 25 years old at the time, 26. I didn't realize what value I was giving. I didn't know what value meant. I was just doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just natural instinct to you. It wasn't like, what can I do or what can I get out of this? It was just more so I wanted to do this. And
exactly.
From it.
Exactly.
So timeline now. So it was 2016. You know, you had gone through that program. You get it. You go through this whole online program. Now, where happens between 2016 to 2019? Post internship, that it took you 3 years to come back to the company itself or and land the job. Like what I'm missing something. What happened?
Yeah, no. The best and worst things happened at that time.
Mm-hmm.
At that time I got fired from a company because I was spending so much time trying to do all these things for K-Swiss.
Okay.
Photos, designs, like ideas.
And so were you a contracted worker for K-Swiss? Are you referring to the internship?
Straight up like, hey, you made it on the board. Every week we're going to email you something. And then every Friday you have to submit it. So it was like homework, weekly homework.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was 6 weeks. Every week you got something. Or I think some of them were like 2 week projects, but still it was like just 2 months. Like,
and this is during your internship or post-internship?
This is during the internship thing. Yeah. Like the board, I just considered it as like an internship, you know, because you're learning how to do things. I never, right. like, it was like pre-recorded videos that they email you. It was a private link to YouTube. And then like, you never really interacted with anybody. It was so weird.
Mm-hmm.
The most interaction I had with them was when I went there. But what happened at that time after was what changed my life. First, I got fired from the job I was working because I was spending too much time on K-Swiss, and this was at a startup, so they needed me to like be more active. It was at screen printing and graphic design startup. I was for sure, I was still in college at the time, deciding if I was going to drop out. And so within like a year, I became a college dropout. I got fired from my job, and I had my girlfriend dump me.
That's a lot. What college did you go to?
I was going to Utah Valley University.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot.
Where my friend Austin built his company of a backpack that you know called Wandered.
Yeah. I love that backpack. That backpack is equivalent to my iPhone. It's always with me. Legit. It's always with me.
I know, I saw it on your video the other day. It was awesome.
I'm telling you, it's always with me. It carries everything I need. So to not get off track, because I know we could talk about anything and everything. So this year now, so your girlfriend decides to go on to another life and you know, you lose your job due to your dedication with K-Swiss, which makes so much sense. When you're a startup, they need everyone to be all in. And at that time, you were like 2 feet in both ponds, right? Yep. Or 1 foot in each pond is the term. Yep. And you drop out, which for most people. And what year was this?
This is 2016
2016. That's still the year. I would say like around 2018, being a dropout was considered cool, right? Like on social media and everything. 2016, it was like, what are you doing? What are you really doing?
Dude, you know, and my parents and everyone, hence like the truth is like, what was I doing? I was a 27-year-old without an associate degree, trying to do a record label, trying to work at a startup, trying, you know, to do 20 million things and still, you know, I don't know what the fuck was going on. So it kind of made sense that everything kind of collapsed. And that was an opportunity for me to really like, okay, what am I doing? What do I want to do? And so I took complete ownership, and that's when my whole life changed. The K-Swiss thing came and went, never heard from them again. I just kind of like learned it. I honed in on design. I honed in on my record label. I got a lot better at taking photos and just being more, you know, being able to just take photos, design, get out there and over and make as many connects as I can. And this period was so important for me because I learned how great I was at photography. I learned how passionate I was about building a brand with music. And then I learned that I could multitask and still create. And I started freelancing. That's when I learned, you know, the power of freelancing. So
that's great. And when you're going all through this, you know, you named a plethora of jobs that most people are trying to do. I would say most entrepreneurs, right? They're trying to multitask different things and do everything. What was your, aside from the collapse of being kind of school, what was your personal breaking point of being like, hey, let me relax, let me take a step back to review what I'm doing and hone in on one or two things instead of the record label, the printing of the shirts, and anything else you had going on?
Yeah, so two key things. Number one, when I, because I had two major, like, oh my God, what the fuck? A big, like, what am I doing with my life? Am I really like that pathetic? So that was the first time I really ever in my life was like, whoa, this is a rude awakening. Mm-hmm. Like, here I am, lost my job and my wife and what the hell. Mm-hmm. So I focused on just like, you know what, let me just do my record label. And while I work on whatever, graphic design and all this stuff on the startup. So
that was the crossroad, the relationship. Yeah. Yep.
It was like, you know what? You just, life happens, you deal with it, you take ownership, you move forward. In my opinion, the startup was perfect because I was doing graphic design all day, cool shit that I liked. My friends that are in music actually worked there. And so I, you know, we would do music and design and everything together. So it was perfect for me. And then I could design and print my own shirts. So I was literally getting paid to learn how to design, to print my own t-shirts and learn all the aspect of like an apparel brand.
It's perfect.
Yeah. So it was like, of course. And then I got fired from that job over just because they couldn't afford to pay me more. And I was like, look, if you don't pay me more, then I'm going to leave. And I ended up getting fired the day before my last day over some super petty things that even now, I'm friends with the owner, but he actually, like a year after that, he called to apologize because he was like, yeah, that wasn't cool. I think he was just bummed that I was leaving. And I was like, the affected everything. Photos.
Let's talk about that. And I think that's really important. In the moment, you were probably extremely frustrated. Why is this happening? What's going on? But months later, 24 months later, whatever the timeline exactly is, you have this opportunity now to be the head of social for a massive shoe brand.
Yeah. So I'm super thankful for that. And that was the second time where I was like, okay, you know, you think you're picking your life up and you think you're moving forward and
momentum. It was
at one point you're all fine and dandy flying first class with people. And I'm not the one paying for it, but you know, you're getting paid to travel.
No, the opportunity's there. Yeah. These life experiences.
Yeah. And then you know, the next day you go into the office and you're fired and you're like, what the fuck? And you're like, okay. At this point, the one thing I did wrong and I wish I would have planned better was to save money.
Mm-hmm.
I've been out spending money because I'm like, oh, I'm making money here. I'm making money here. I want to do all this. And so I was just like going all out. And then I found myself with no job, an apartment that I probably couldn't afford, and accumulating debt.
Mm-hmm.
And so that at that point, that was when I decided, okay, take one bigger step back. And you got to eliminate all the shit that you don't need in your life, whether that's people, comfort, whatever it is. And so at that point, I decided to leave Utah, and then I moved to Seattle. And this is end of 2017, I believe, into 2018, right around there. I don't know the exact dates, but I didn't have a job. Obviously, I just got fired and I didn't have a place to live because I don't know anybody. I didn't know anybody in Seattle. And then I just left. And, you know, I went to Seattle, and that was the biggest pivoting point of my life because now I'm a 30-year-old, that has no college degree, is in debt, and doesn't have a job. And I found myself within the first, you know, day of living in Seattle, working at Chipotle as a line cook in downtown Seattle. So that's where we are in the timeline. 2007, end of 2017, early 2018, I was living in Seattle by myself, and I restarted my whole entire career.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the time that everything changed, and then 10 months, 11 months after that is where I am now.
You're in Seattle, and where did K-Swiss come into play for you now to take that position of head of social?
So now I'm in Seattle, and I got a good resume of, like, I know how to shoot photos, I know how to build brands, and I know how to hustle, like, boom. So it was, the first 2 weeks were hard because I was working at Chipotle, and then I ended up getting a gig at another startup because, you know, thank God for startups, where I was doing all their photos and graphic design and blah, blah, blah. So this is really important because with the startups and me being an entrepreneur, the guy that hired me, he was looking at all my portfolio and all this stuff. And he's like, oh, it looks like you're a big fan of Gary Vee. I'm like, yeah, I'm a major fan of Gary Vee. You know, I met him once, and so that was like our connection. And I always wore K-Swiss because, you know, hence the K-Swiss thing where they represent entrepreneurship. I'd only been wearing K-Swiss a little bit before that time, like right before I was moving to Seattle, is when K-Swiss announced their partnership with Gary Vee. And I was actually, weirdly enough, I was one of the very first people to ever see the original Gary Vee prototype shoe, which I have. Barney gave it to me.
Wow.
Which means the world to me. But in the back of my mind, when I was in Seattle and I was just trying to like get a bunch of freelance gigs, that was when I was coming up with ideas and learning how to give value. So I was buying K-Swiss shoes, obviously the Gary Vee ones and other designs. So I just started learning, teaching myself, I should say, how to shoot photos for like sneaker photos, lifestyle photos. So I was always looking on Instagram being like, okay, this is a cool photo, let me try to remake this. So I just started taking a bunch of photos, putting them on Instagram. I noticed K-Swiss liking them here and there. Occasionally Barney would like them. Barney's the president of K-Swiss, you know that you know, kind of plays a major role in everything with me getting there. And then I had this idea that I never got to pitch and I never got to do, but the idea was to pitch a 10-track or a 10-video/track project to K-Swiss and call it Next Up or Up Next, I can't remember. And it was, I have a bunch of music producer friends that were just on the, they were on the brink of becoming the next big thing or whatever. And three out of the 10 that I decided, they, when I say they made it, like they're there already.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, 10 different shoes, 10 different tracks, like with these people, I'm going to go to K-Swiss, I'm going to pitch it. This is how much money I'm going to need for it. And in turn, they get music and photos and like this really cool project. So I emailed Barney and completely lied and said, hey, I'm going to be in LA this time. would love to meet you. And he hits me back and says, I think I can do that day. Just let me know and I'll make some time for you. So I immediately, as soon as he said yes, I booked my flight.
I'm going to cut you off right there because I think the word that you use isn't correct for the opportunity that you created. I don't think that's a lie. I think that's someone who, and I mean this because I'll tell you this, I think I've said it once, maybe. I did the same thing with Elena Cardone.
Oh, yes.
So I had told her, I was like, hey, I'm going to be down in Miami for some event. And I was like, hey, I'm available Monday between the hours of 11 or Tuesday. It was Monday or Tuesday between the hours of 11 and 3 because when I researched flights, they were like $100.
Yeah.
I was like, let me know what time best works for you. And she's like, yeah, I'm available at 1:00. I'm like, perfect. I'll be done by 10:30. I called my friend and I was like, yo, we need to fly down to Miami. And that was like 3 days before of whatever it is. And I think that is a great story because you're creating opportunity for yourself. You wanted it so bad that you knew that, not saying that you were going to be somewhere, but rather that you're creating the opportunity for that person that you want to work with or create a deeper relationship with.
Exactly. I love that. This portion of my life will forever, it's just like the most mind-blowing kind of chain of events that happened within like a 1 month period. That for real, it's like if it wasn't for this 1 month, if it wasn't for everything years before, like 4 years, 5 years of like building a brand, learning how to do this, getting fired, getting divorced, dropping out of school, everything you could imagine, just like all of a sudden, like this window of opportunity like showed up. Mm-hmm. So I booked my flights. I again outgrew the company that I was working with, and I was making more money on the side than I was at my 9-to-5. So I decided, like, look, the proper thing is if you guys can't pay me more, let's take a step back and let me actually let me be a contractor, mm-hmm. and you guys can be my client. I can still do my other design. You cool. still get And so yeah.
The win-win all around.
Yeah, so that happened, and they said, we'll think about it, which turned into no. I said, whatever, I quit. Again, on good terms. This was like on good terms.
Right, but and I also think that's it's just a life lesson where it's understanding that just because it's a no doesn't mean it's a goodbye. And just because that no doesn't mean that there's that friendship has to kill itself. I personally had a similar situation. It was one of my first clients, and she's one of my best friends. And then she has a cryotherapy business, and we still talk every day. We still do business together still to this day. But at that time, when I had just started, she had me on a retainer, and she was like, hey, we're going through some stuff this month. We can't afford you, and don't take it personal because we can't pay you. And then in my head, when I was young, I was like, how can I not take this personal? You're not paying me. You know, we're not going to be doing business together anymore. But it's flipping the switch and understanding that there's a difference between personal and business. They have good intention. They want the best for you. But in the current state of the business, they can't afford what they need you to do. So, you know, it's not – I think that's a great point you brought up. It's just understanding that not now, maybe later. And that was the case less than – I think it was like 4 months later. She gets acquired by this major parent company that comes in, this hedge fund company. And then I was in airports literally 4 months later with the work. Yeah. I've never told that story actually either, but
– Thank you. Yeah. This is these two stories, what you shared and what I just shared, they're so important for two reasons. One, I moved to Seattle because I was like, look, if I'm going to, there was one thing, it was Gary Vee's advice. It was, if you're good enough, you win. You will win. That's the only thing that was on my mind when I left Utah. It's like, you know what? fuck these guys. If they think that I'm not good enough, then I'm going to prove it to everybody. If I'm good enough, I'm going to win. So I didn't like, I literally told my family that I was moving to Seattle the day before. I was already like packed everything. And then in Seattle, I was all about like, what am I going to do? What do I want to do? How am I going to do it? Well, it was build my record label. Mm-hmm. How am I going to build my record label and brand and like support it? And the only way was like, you have to build your own agency, social mm-hmm. media marketing agency that work with each other, because then people will hire you based on the work that you do. So that's where I was at. And then I found myself in this moment. And I remember being in a coffee shop, 7 a.m. I always went there, First and Cherry in Seattle, working every fucking morning. And I remember seeing K-Swiss going live with Barney. So it was Gary and Patrick and Barney in New York, and they were talking about the new Gary V, Clouds and Dirt. And it was like, you could call in. And so, this month is so wild, because a week before, like a week or two before, when they were doing the Crushing It tour around Barney, he knew I was a major fan of Gary and being the homie. I don't know how for reals Barney and I's relationship became to be, but I remember he texted me one day. He said, "Hey, are you busy?" And I'm like, "No, of course I'm not busy. Like, not for you."
You get that text message, everything is canceled.
I remember he's like, "Okay, I'm gonna call you up in 5 minutes. Just answer." And I'm like, "Okay." And this is when I worked in, you know, at this design place in Seattle. So he calls me up. I'm like, "Hey, what's up?" And he goes, "Hey, what's up, Omar? I got a friend here that wants to say hi to you." All of a sudden, it's Gary.
Nice.
"Omar, my man, hey, Barney told me like your support for the brand and the shoes, and I just want to say thank you." And I was like, that was it, you know, nothing else. And that phone call to this day means the world to me, because having Barney call me, having Gary say thank you, having both of them say thank you for me was like the most validation of like, dude, whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like 3 weeks later, when they're in New York and they're doing Ask Gary V about the shoes, I was like just typing away, like asking questions, talking about the shoes, boom, boom, boom. And they were getting callers, and all of a sudden, fucking internet lag, my phone rings, and I'm like, no way. And I answer it, and it's like, I'm on the live. So all of a sudden I hear Barney and Gary, and they're like, "Oh, is that Omar? Omar from Utah?" I was like, "Oh shit," you know. So then I started talking to them on this phone. My phone cuts out because fucking service. It doesn't matter. I get my like 1 minute of fame, and I'm feeling like, "Oh, this is amazing."
Omar, you want to know that's crazy? I'm getting goosebumps right now. I've seen that interview, and I know Gary's like, "Hey, Omar, are you still there?" Omar, oh, I guess he. I know exactly what you're talking about, because when he went on the show, it was Ask Gary V. CEO of K-Swiss. I remember like it was yesterday. That's insane.
Yeah. So I'm like, "Oh my God, I can't believe this happened." They knew who I was, like it was in a whatever weird way. And then right after that is when I called, or I decided to make the trip to
Los Angeles.
Yeah. So this is like the beginning of June. And then, I tweeted, and I have the tweet, and I screenshotted it because I think I did this before I bought the ticket. I don't know. But I just said, "All I want for my birthday is a photo of me, Barney, and Gary. Like, that's all I want for my birthday." I booked my flight right around my birthday because I have a client in Denver.
Yeah.
So I have to go to Denver, say what up, catch up, do all these things. I'm going to Los Angeles right after that because I'm going to meet up with Barney. And then right before that, I'm going to Utah because I haven't seen my family in a year. So okay. I want to go say hi. Go to Utah, talk to my family, telling them everything that's going on, like amazing, you know, things. I'm starting my own agency. I'm going to meet with Barney. I'm going to pitch this. I you know, I'm telling them everything that's going on. And Barney says, "Hey, I have a plus one to go to this weed. What is it called? It was some investment thing with weed and Gary. It's for Gary's new company. If you want to come." I'm like, hell yeah. And he said, so you have to come a day earlier. So I'm like, shit, let me move my flights. So I think what I didn't, something happened, but I ended up going from Utah to LA and not to Denver. Like, I was like, I'll figure out the Denver thing in a, like in the mix. So I go to Los Angeles one day earlier to meet with Barney, and I get to meet Gary Vee again. And this is the day after my birthday. This is all in the same month, all June. And what do you know? Like, it happens. I get the photo one day after my birthday. It's me, Gary, and Barney, and Tyler Babin, who used to work, you know, with Gary. And I have the freaking selfie in that elevator being like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. This is like a dream come true, blah, blah, blah. I'm like rubbing shoulders with Gary, but I'm not like fanboying at this time. I was like, this guy's just a regular dude.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling it, and it, like, even inspired me more on how just real he was.
Yeah.
But the reason why that's so important was when I went upstairs to like get some air and I was with Barney, he was like, so Omar, like, what do you do? And that turned into, well, I create social media content and I build brands. And he said, oh, I thought you did music. I'm like, well, I did or do music.
I do that on the side, but I'll
yeah,
do
that. But no, but it's the truth. Like, yeah, at nights I'm, you know, going out to shows, I'm taking photos, I'm still like trying to DJ, whatever, run a apparel. In fact, I'm wearing one of our shirts. And he said, oh, it's interesting. I thought you always did music. I'm like, well, yeah, but like, I got to pay bills and I do that through building social media. And then he said, oh, well, you know, we've been looking for someone like this. And I was like, interesting. I'm like, I said, did you find the guy? And he said, well, I don't know about that, but why don't you come into the office tomorrow and let's just talk about this. So that's where everything changed, because I canceled my flight and I went home right after. I went to my friend's house right after that meeting or that situation, and I made a deck like why they should hire me. Here's your current creative. Here's the captions. This wow. is what I think is wrong or how I can improve it. Here's new captions that I've made. And I just like did this thing, but it's like they know who I was or who I am. They've seen my photos. I've been sending them photos for years now for free. In fact, some of the early photos on the K-Swiss Instagram, like some of the very first photos are mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then that turned into an interview. And another window of opportunity happened, and I just fucking took it, you know? With no guarantees. It was like, hey, we're not guaranteeing you a job. We'll give you I think they said 60-day or 90-day trial. You're a contractor, and they were paying me like nothing. Mm-hmm. And because I was a contractor, they couldn't pay for me to relocate. So here in Seattle, I'm just barely getting out of debt. I've got no money. And I'm like, fuck, here we go again, you know? I have to get out of this contract. I have to, like, pack up all my stuff. And I have to move to Los Angeles and find a place to live within, like, 2 weeks, because that's when they wanted me to start. That's when Clouds and Dirt was launching.
Mm-hmm.
I did everything in 1 week. I canceled my Denver trip. I flew back home, packed up everything I needed to, got rid of everything I needed to, packed up a U-Haul, and showed up to K-Swiss 1 week before I needed to start working. And fast forward, and I'm, you know, the K-Swiss community manager and continue to do the best that I can every day.
I love it, man. That story is just amazing. It really is. It just shows the dedication and the focus that you had on staying true to what you wanted and things aligning itself. You know, that Gary Vee phone call, that's what I like to call. So anyone listening there, oh, whoop-de-doo, Gary Vee told him thank you and showed him love for 10 seconds. But it's the bigger picture of who it came from and at the timing of your life, of where your focus and attention was, which was K-Swiss, Barney, and Gary Vee motivating you. Every single day, right? So now I'd love to talk about, you know, the creative direction of the brand and the collaborations you guys have done in the past 24, not even 24 months, less than 16 months. There's been so many. Every time I see one launch, like 2 weeks later, it's like, boom, another big hitter. Aside from Gary Vee himself, obviously coming on and being what I would say a big face for the brand and push for the brand, I would love to talk about how, you know, you guys, one of your latest ones, the ones that caught my attention, it was nostalgic, was the Ghostbusters shoe.
Yes. So these collaborations, right when I got to K-Swiss, they had just gotten some sort of partnership with Sony and Universal to use like licensing rights for a few different movies or whatever. And so they just picked a few different projects, and Ghostbusters is one of them. It was Ghostbusters, Clueless, The Matrix. Those are kind of like the major ones that I can think of at the top of my head. But we got the rights to use it to make a shoe, and the designer that was chosen was perfect. And then we were like, all right, how do we like make this come to life and like really do something different? Because I think Bape at the time was also doing a collaboration. And for people that are listening, to create a shoe, it takes 18 months. So Wow. Yeah, so the license was forever ago, and the process of making it was like, you know, a year. And so so that was an interesting project, and we got to shoot Dan Aykroyd at Ghost Corp and create like an unboxing video with him. He was so funny, all business from one place to the next. And then side story, but I was so hyped for meeting him that day, and like, oh my God, I can't believe I got to meet Dan Aykroyd and like take photos of him and K-Swiss and everything, you know, that next night, two nights after that, I went to the Quentin Tarantino movie theater.
Yeah.
On Beverly or whatever it is, with my homie Santi, and we were like gonna watch the midnight showing of Blues Brothers, because we're like, dude, Dan Aykroyd, we got to go watch this film. It's a cult classic. And when we were like walking over there, he was like, oh, I had this dream that Dan Aykroyd showed up to the movie theater, and Quentin Tarantino also showed up too, and we got to kick it with them. So we're sitting there waiting for the movie to start, and fucking Quentin Tarantino comes out.
What
the hell? Granted, it is his movie theater, but you know, wasn't expecting that. So he's talking about the movie, and he says, why am I talking about it? Why don't we just get Dan to talk about it? So then Dan Aykroyd comes out, and he just like comes from the back, and he's like, what the hell? So Dan Aykroyd and Quentin Tarantino were there two nights after that. I thought that was really amazing. And so once the shoe dropped for me, it was that much more impactful, because I got to meet him in his office. I got to see him like cut loose in a movie theater. And then I met him a little after that when we did a pop-up event. But that whole event was amazing. And that strategy, I don't know, I think you asked me about strategy, but Barney calls it the spark strategy, which is you keep putting out these iconic pop culture moments with not a lot of shoes, and it gets people's attention. And you do that enough over and over and over. And like you said, man, I keep seeing you guys put this new shoe or this collab or whatever it is. And it's to keep getting your attention, because ultimately what really makes money for K-Swiss isn't Ghostbusters. It's the K-Swiss Classic. It's the one shoe that, you know, sells over and over and over and over. And so, like Breaking Bad, that was massive, right? It's just...
Yeah, just to give people some limelight, name a few campaigns you've done in the past 12 months.
So Ghostbusters, which was the Stay Puft Man shoe and the Slimer shoe. Breaking Bad, we've done...
Are you able to touch on how many shoes sold, like a generic?
Yes. Okay, yeah, great. So... because shoes take forever to make, and especially the special project ones, we don't make a lot of shoes. We make like 300 to 500 pairs. Unless other companies like Foot Locker are going to buy them, we'll make like 1,500 pairs. Still not a lot. Like, we want to keep them limited so they sell out, obviously, and then people can resell them. So like Breaking Bad, the very first one that we did, we only did 300 pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold out in like 20 minutes.
Okay. Now, when something like that happens, do you guys plan to release more, or is it, or just that's it? Is that the market strategy for K Swiss? Hey, let's make 300, sell out, and then, as you just said, like have people resell them, and then that's it?
With quick drops, the strategy is just to make K Swiss as relevant as possible and get it in front of as many eyes, because really that's the thing, you know. We're not a hypebeast kind of sneaker. That's just facts. You know, we're not selling out like an Air Jordan is. And so
right.
When we get those little wins, it's really important for us, you know, because, you know, it's not very common that, and truth be told, right, it's not very common that a K-Swiss sneaker sells out. I think the first one that ever did that from, I'm sure they maybe had some in the past, but the Gary V 01 and 02, that sold out fast and crashed the K-Swiss internet or the website.
Yeah.
Other than that, it was just, you know, the Breaking Bad sneaker. And that was a good example. That was the first time I saw even someone like almost fist fighting for the sneakers, which I thought was cool. So
we got Breaking Bad. We had Ghostbusters. We have obviously have Gary V's. What else?
We did Clueless. We did The Matrix. We just did Boys in the Hood. Those are the major collaborations. And then now we have a new entrepreneur that we're working with. And for, I don't know how much of creatives listen to this audience or whatever, hopefully they know this name, but Chase Jarvis.
Mm-hmm.
He is like,
For context for people that don't know who he is, who is that?
So Chase Jarvis is a world renowned, photographer and entrepreneur. He owns a company. It's an online learning platform called Creative Life. He does a podcast called I think it's Daily Creative or the Chase Jarvis Live Show. He essentially built the first Instagram. It was called like Camera Phone or something like that. Phone, I can't remember. But in his book, Creative Calling, you hear that whole entire story. And I remember that app. So before Instagram was Instagram, there was an app that you take photos and do filters and stuff like that. And that was his app. And now, you know, he's done campaigns for Nike, Apple, Nikon, you name it. Like, he's the action sports photographer, kind of behind the scenes guy. And now his whole thing is to help people find their inner creative and build the life that they want. And so we just started working on a project with him. And so that for me is massive, because I was the one that brought him to the table, and it's been like 6 months trying to get those papers signed, and they finally got signed. And thank God it happened before the whole like situation that we're in happened, because we're still able to get that project moving. So you'll probably see that happen at the end of the year, but that's
awesome.
A new collab that we have.
That's great. What would you give advice to any creative that's lost right now? What would you tell them?
Two things. Don't stop creating. Number one, you know, don't stop creating, because if you stop creating, you have more time to probably focus on the bad. Find ways to be creative and create for maybe create for brands that you'd like to create, even though they're not hiring you. But this is an opportunity to create opportunity. Opportunity to create opportunity. Because I was literally thinking about this today, and right before you and I talked, I posted it. But it was, what an awesome time to reflect on your life. Are you really happy with it? If shit was about to go down right now and everything before today is what your life consists of, that's your quote unquote legacy, like, does that make you happy? And if the answer is no, then take this time to think what you can do different moving forward. Do you want to say, I don't want to work in this industry anymore, I want to do something else? And start taking the time to learn those things so you can be better prepared for whatever happens in the future. So that's like the number one piece of advice. Don't stop creating and create for companies or brands that you would love to work for.
You're amazing, Omar. Omar, where can people find you? What's the best platform, link, No, I'll put Omar that in the description.
Everything Omar Prestwich. So Instagram, obviously, I'm super active at Omar Prestwich. Twitter at Omar Prestwich.
Do you have a TikTok yet?
I do, but fuck. At yeah, Omar well, Prestwich. Everything Omar Prestwich. I just figure, like, I want people to find me, and I want to help as many people as I can. And why am I confusing? I'm a one-of-a-kind guy.
Yeah.
So Omar Prestwich it is.
Omar, thank you so much again for coming on the show. I appreciate you telling your story, giving great insight and just valuable life lessons of going after what you want and not letting anyone or anything tell you otherwise.
Appreciate you and appreciate the opportunity, man. Thank you.